what can Canadians do then? I mean, apart from waiting for the American empire to do whatever it is that empires do, what do you hope that Canadians will do to help bring about this condition of equality and to bring about peace in the Middle East?
Yeah, I think it's essential for Canadians to be active in pressuring the Canadian government of stopping its support for Israel and stopping the tax deductions that goes in support of the Israeli aggression. There, for your information, there are lots of Canadian Zionists from Jewish background who are going there and volunteering inside the Israeli army to suppress the Palestinian people. This shouldn't happen. They are Canadian citizens. They shouldn't be allowed to go and oppress other people. This is against United Nations resolutions that the Canadian government supports. The Canadian government says that the occupied territories are occupied territories and Israel should leave them. And they support 242 and 338, the United Nations Security Council resolution. So if they do so, they shouldn't allow Canadian citizens to go there and fight against the, an oppressed people and subjugated people who are under occupation.
Okay,
and
hang on for just a minute. Could you just, for our listeners, could you elaborate on those two resolutions that you just mentioned? I frequently see UN resolutions enumerated and referred to, and it's really rare to have someone who knows what they are to explain what they state and what they mean.
Yeah, the 242 resolution was passed in 1967, just after the war, and in it the Security Council asked the Israel to leave the occupied territories, and that was in 67. Basically, this resolution been affirmed and reaffirmed all over again. 338 is affirming the first one, the 242, which was taken, I believe, in 68, a year later. But since then, Israel ignored this resolution and kept its occupation of the West Bank, and not just that, they kept grabbing land from the occupied territories. As I said, B'Tselem just issued a report saying that the settlers control now 42% of the West Bank, which is illegal under the Fourth Geneva Convention. You can't plant settlers in occupied territories. You can't grab the land from the occupied territories. This is basic principle in the Fourth Geneva Convention.
B'Tselem is the Israeli human rights group.
Yeah, B'Tselem is the Israeli human rights. And they're the one who's saying that these Jewish settlers are grabbing almost 42%. Actually, to be exact, it's 41.9% of the West Bank, almost 42%. So, you know, I mean, you can't, the Palestinians won't accept that, that 42% of their land be kept under Israeli control, because it's, again, against any principle, whether it's for Geneva Convention or against United Nations Resolution. And the Arab people and the Palestinian people see this hypocrisy of the Americans. When Iraq occupied Kuwait, they forced them out in 6 months by military force. And while at the same time they're supporting Israeli occupation for the last 35 years, not just supporting it, they're giving the green light for the Israeli military to reoccupy the West Bank cities, as Bush did and his vice president did and his Powell, his foreign minister, did. So it's clear, you know, they are supporting this aggression, and the people see this hypocrisy. And you know, when Bush asks why people hate us, I mean, he knows why people hate him, and especially in the Middle East, because he's keeping Israeli occupation, he's allowing Israeli occupation to continue, and he's forcing dictatorships on the Arab people.
Jeff Halper said in an article on May 15th, just recently, that relations between Israel and the Palestinians now are back to where they were in the 1970s, trying to navigate a transition from a kind of municipal or colonial autonomy in Bethlehem and Ramallah and Hebron to some semblance of Palestinian independence. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think what happened the last 18 months really set the peace process back at least 20 years, like Jeff said, because with the Oslo process, lots of people became hopeful, including Palestinians. Palestinians and Israelis were hopeful that there'll be a resolution. The Palestinian bargained in a good faith with sometimes stupidity too, because I think the Palestinians, when they signed the Oslo Accord, they thought that the Oslo Accord says that Israel shouldn't build settlements anymore, because in one article in the Oslo Accord was that both parties shouldn't change facts on the ground, which will jeopardize the final status negotiations. They didn't spell out the settlement as such, but I mean, from reading this thing, you know, building settlements is changing facts on the ground, which will jeopardize the final status negotiation, because the settlements was one of the final status negotiations issues. They were stupid because they didn't spell them out. Israel say that doesn't include settlements, you know, which is, you know, I mean, clear it does. But, you know, the Israelis in 7 years, from 93 to 2000 and to 2000, and during that 7 years, and according to Peace Now, the Israeli movement, Peace Now, they said Israel doubled the units of the housing units in the settlements, and they doubled the settlers. So it's clearly Israel violated, and they didn't want to abide by the Oslo Accord. The main objective of signing the Oslo Accord to the Israelis was to stop the first intifada, which was costing them economically and militarily huge amounts of money, basically. And they felt they'll buy time with the Oslo process, which again, you know, I mean, you can't deceive the people forever. Although Arafat was trying to convince the Palestinian that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, the Palestinian figured, you know, he's not delivering. After 5 years of the Oslo process, there was supposed to be a Palestinian state, and all the issues in the final status negotiation was supposed to be finalized. That was in 1998. So after the passing of 2 years, the people figured, you know, the Israelis are not really interested in giving a Palestinian state to the Palestinian people. All they are doing is grabbing more land and putting more settlers. And then the provocative visit to Al-Haram al-Sharif, to the mosque in Jerusalem of Sharon, was the spark that sparked the new, or the Al-Aqsa Intifada, or the second Intifada, where, you know, thousands or ten thousand police officers came just to protect Sharon to enter the mosque, and a day later they murdered six protesters at the holy site. And this is what sparked the second intifada. So Arafat didn't start the intifada. He didn't control it to start with, and he's not controlling it now, because the Palestinian people are fed up with Israeli arrogance and Israeli oppression.
How is a Canada-Palestine association responding to this deteriorating situation? Or maybe it's not a deteriorating situation. It sounds as though there are some things that are improving and some things that are getting worse.
Yeah, as a group, we've been doing grassroots work since 1980 as Canada-Palestine Association, where, you know, We responded to 1982 invasion through demonstrations and, you know, public awareness. But after the Intifada started, there was a larger group that's been formed, which we are in it as individuals, really, which is the Canada-Palestine Support Network, which has a website, and maybe people could, if they need to know more about what's happening locally, about the activities, they could go to the website, which is www.canpalnet.ca. And through that, they could even help in the support work by signing petitions. There is a statement now being circulated on the website to pressure the Canadian government put pressure on Israel to end its occupation of the Palestinian territories. And there is already around 800 signatures on the on this petition. So it's important people do active work by, you know, educating themselves, by signing petitions, by speaking out, by writing to the politicians, by writing letters to the media, and by being involved, because I don't think the solution is going to come from these regimes that support Israel without pressure from the people in North America.
What do you hope for Palestine? Ultimately, what do you see as the future for Palestine? Yeah.
I hope that there will be a democratic state in all of Palestine where people are judged on their merits rather than their ethnicity or their religion. And this is a vision which we had and we shared with the people for the last 2,000 years. In spite of all the invasions that happened, the Palestinian people stayed on their land, and in spite of all the occupations, one of the worst was the Ottoman occupation that lasted 500 years, but the Ottomans gone and the people stayed, and I believe that the people will stay and they will establish a democratic society where tolerance and equality will prevail.
Okay. Hannah, I'd like to give you the last word. Is there anything that you'd like to say that we haven't touched on? Anything that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, I think it's important for every human being as part of this global village to be involved in fighting all injustices, whether it's in Palestine, whether it's against our native brothers and sisters here in North America, or whether it's against the people in Colombia or Central America or in Africa. I think it's important for all of us to be united and to support each other, and we should make our voice heard everywhere, and by our solidarity and unity, we could achieve that.
Thank you very much. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Jim.